Welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is Craig, and we're at the YAR 2016 conference in Sydney. And it's my great pleasure to be sitting here with Dr. Brian Little. How are you doing?
Great. Good to be here.
So you're doing lots of things in the area of science and psychology, but you're at universities in Canada. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, I spend half my time at the University of Cambridge in the UK, and the other part of the year in Canada, where my wife is a professor at the university. And I study human personality. It ranges from the study of neurons right to the study of human narrative. So it's a pretty broad campus we study.
And you're here at the YAR conference talking to us about the personalities at work.
Yes.
And lots of interesting discussion, particularly after the talks you've been giving in each of the cities, about whether we're introverted or extroverted.
Yeah, that topic always seems to get a lot of attention. I introduce it by suggesting that there are four other major dimensions of personality that spell out an acronym, emotion. So there's openness and conscientiousness, extroversion to be sure, agreeableness and neuroticism. And so just to call a person an introvert or an extrovert is a bit misleading unless you know where they stand on the other four major dimensions of personality. But it's a good dimension to look at because it helps me introduce what I call the biogenic features of personality, which have to do with your neurophysiology and so on. The sociogenic, which has to do with the cultural codes that urge you to act in particular ways. And what I call the ideogenic sources of human personality, which are the personal projects that you create and craft your life around. And so by using extroversion and introversion, I was able to, I think, cast some light on each of those aspects of personality. And it always worries me because part of my message is that we shouldn't regard ourselves as putting pigeons in pigeonholes, because I'm not even sure pigeons belong in pigeonholes. But I worry that people come away saying, I'm an extroverter, and I'm an introverter, you're an introvert, when in fact the most important takeaway from my lecture is that we can often act out of character. We're not bound by our biochemistry or bound by our biogenic nature that we often have the occasion to act out of character, to rise to the occasion. So the example I give, I start with myself. I'm a professor. Some might see me, if they didn't know me, as a very extroverted, outgoing professor, but biogenically, I'm very introverted. And there's certain characteristics which I explain to my audiences about those. But if you're trying to stimulate a student class at 8 in the morning, and you want to express some enthusiasm for a field you adore, to students you adore, it seems to me that you have to act out of character. So over the years, it's become easier, of course, because I've got 87,000 hours of experience doing it. But it's still second nature. It's not first nature. And that has some consequences.
So you have 9 times the 10,000 hours of practice.
Yeah. there's an undue specificity to my recollection there.
The first thing in your talk is you talk about the little test, and I noticed on that slide, that's something from the late 70s.
Yes.
I think it's amazing that these are things that don't change terribly much. Like, people are still people.
Yeah. That scale, I developed that scale just basically for audiences to take to get a sense of where they stand on this dimension. And I always recommend, as you know, that they consult one of the more up-to-date measures of the Big Five, which includes extroversion. But I found that it does 2 things. Well, 3. One, it introduces them to a hint of what their extroversion score might be. Secondly, it gives them a chance to get involved by actually answering a few questions. And for the extroverts in the group, this is really regarded as, phew, we're not just going to be lectured at, we're going to be doing something. But third, it also gives them a chance later to sort of compare notes and I have mixed feelings about that, to be honest. I think that's why I always end by saying, don't ask just what type are you, because they're not types to begin with. They're dimensions, normally distributed, not bimodally distributed. But asked, what are the core projects in your life that drives your behavior, so that in this occasion you might be seen as very neurotic, and this very stable and stabilizing to others, and this you may be introverted, and that you may be extroverted. And often these disparities in the way we present ourselves to others are the result of the core projects in our lives that matter. Putting on a great party for my daughter, standing up to the opposition in my political beliefs, making the best case for my software firm with these incredulous clients. We have to sometimes do it. It's called professionalism. Mm. And it's often due to love. We act out of character because we want to be supportive of our spouses. And you may discover that it's now been 11 years that you've been acting out of character. And I argue that this puts you at risk for burning out unless you can find some kind of restorative niche in which you can nurture your first nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To me, that's important.
Do you find, we're obviously an Agile podcast, and that has reinvigorated people thinking about these type of things. Things like Myers-Briggs and those have been around for years, but they're always that thing that you did on a team building session when the manager wanted to use up some do a team building exercise or something. But I've noticed more probably in the last 5 to 10 years that people actually are taking a lot more of an interest in this as collaboration becomes more of a preferred working method. Is that something you're seeing?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I've always been extremely skeptical of the use of personality testing in organizations. And in my book, Me, Myself, and Us, I have a whole chapter where I sort of put constraints on the relevance of things like Myers-Briggs, excuse me, in part because it reinforces the notion that you are either an extrovert or an introvert, or some of the other attributes that Myers-Briggs will assess. And you're given a profile. And the implicit notion, although good Myers-Briggs researchers and practitioners know not to do this, but often the people who take it secondarily and then sort of pass it on will feel that this is a kind of fixed trait, again, like the pigeons and pigeonholes. And I think such assessment devices are good for starting a conversation, but they're deadly if they conclude a conversation, because then it leads to people saying, well, how can you do this, Dave? You're an introvert. Or how can you do this, Doug? You're too extroverted to be able to handle the detail work of this particular project. And that drives me nuts, because we are not that inflexible. We have degrees of freedom. We have capacity to learn and shape our behavior in ways that will redound to our benefit and the benefit of our companies if we're a bit more sensitive. So, as I say in my talk, awareness of our enduring traits, and they are pretty stable, is a necessary but not a sufficient understanding for advancing how we really can explain our own behavior. It's a necessary component, but it's certainly insufficient. We're more than that.
Mm.
We're more than a bunch of traits.
But one thing though, when I'm working with teams, is knowing that we're all different is or being aware of that.
Yep.
It's so easy to get caught up in your own. If my personality is very much around dotting the I's and crossing the T's,
yep,
somebody else is very much a strong decision maker versus someone else who wants to make sure everyone has a say.
Right.
That's why these things are actually very useful for teams, particularly if you're forming a team or bringing someone new in.
Yes, yeah, they are. And it makes us aware of our diversity. And the trick is to orchestrate that diversity in a way that will not sound terrible and will actually sing a nice song. I'll get off the musical metaphor in a minute, but right now I'm enjoying it very much. I think that if it's done in that atmosphere, that context of team building and respect for individual differences, great. As long as it doesn't conclude that Dave will always be the judger, and Alex will always be the quiet, analytic one. Because a couple of things happen. First, each of those may have never really acted in their true selves, so what you're seeing is sort of behavior they think is appropriate for the group. But also, if we simply stick within our preferred domain, we don't grow. Mm. And I think that setting manageable goals that will allow us to stretch ourselves is the way we become more fully human. And I think otherwise we sort of agglomerate everything to our preconception of who we are. And I think we decrease, again, that term for me matters a lot, our degrees of freedom to act in the world. And so I think as long as we put in those caveats, I think using it as a team building exercise is just great.
So what's your advice for people who might be leaders or people who are coaches listening to this? Because we do seem to get more dragged into the people problems than the technology problems a lot these days.
Yeah.
What's a piece of advice that you can pass on to people in those sort of leadership or roles where they're trying to help people grow?
Yeah, I think a variation on the question that I've asked my students, and I allude to this in my talk, that I used to say before class, come in, could you be there before class? I'd say, hey, how you doing? And they say, fine. And next class, how you doing? Fine. And then one day, just randomly, I said, no, really, how are you doing? And that, no, really, how are you doing? I think let them know that it wasn't just every day, have a nice day. I really did care about what they're doing and how's it going. And those, of course, turn on the question of what projects are you pursuing? What aspirations have been screwed up this term? What goals have been precluded from you even exploring because you're a mere programmer or because you're a girl? And it's these preclusions and proscriptions, as well as the delights that they're pursuing that give meaning to them in their lives, rather than the traits they have, that I think really starts the discussion along a path that I think has more reward. Now, this is time intensive. It means that you if you've got 300 employees, it's going to be hard to do this. But if you have a team of 12, it's not hard to say, let's just talk about you and what matters to you. And sometimes it helps to say, here were what my goals were 10 years ago. And to be honest about one's own shortcomings and challenges. And that will give a kind of sense of, as we say, where the person is coming from. And within that, then, you can talk about abilities and aspirations and ask them if they've ever actually tried to move into new directions, if they want to, and how you can help them do that. Maybe a change of project, maybe working with somebody who's particularly good in the sales function. And here you draw upon some of what we understand from the ongoing research. So there should be, I would hope, an interdigitation between what we're doing on the research side and what people are doing on the practical side. For example, we know that those who score in the middle of the scale of introversion-extroversion, those we call ambiverts, which, depending on where you make the dividing point, would be most people. Mm-hmm. It's bimodally, it's a U-shaped curve rather than a bell curve rather than a bimodal curve. What's interesting is that in a field like sales, where you would expect that extroverts would be the best. And this was shown for some time, but because one only looked in those days at the extremes, they missed the fact that it's the ambiverts who actually are better in sales. And this was surprising. And then they're trying to understand what it is, because in a way they might be able to incorporate the skills of both introverts and extroverts. And indeed it seems as if this is what was happening, that the ambiverts were able to, perhaps not quite as passionately as the extrovert, but they're able to convey the message, the sales message, the marketing message, but they're able to do something else that comes naturally to introverts. They're able to ask questions. And that's really, and that to me is terrific. So if you were to talk to an extrovert who's sort of peaked out on sales but wants to do better, then they may actually adopt the role, listen to and modulate in the direction of an introvert, and actually that might have a salutary effect upon their sales ability. So it's things like that. Is the reading the literature that we generate on our side of the research enterprise, and then translating it into interesting exercises for your teams that will enhance their capacity to work and live well.
Mm-hmm. So talk about translating things. Your book, Me, Myself, and Us.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that book. What will we find if we open that up and take a read?
Yeah, a lot of jokes. well, they're not jokes because I can't tell jokes. But they say it's a very humorous book because I don't see how you can survive life without looking at it from a deeply humorous perspective, because we're strange little creatures. Mm. I mean, we are strange. And
I just look at the way my dog looks at me, and I'm sure
he's saying, you know, what the feline? You know, I mean, he just doesn't understand you. I lectured for many years in Canada at Carle, and then for 5 years, most recently at Harvard. And during those lectures, something really interesting happened, that the class would begin, and then it would get bigger, and then it would get bigger and bigger. And these weren't just Harvard students. These were their ex-boyfriends that they were bringing to class. And then some of the parents visited. And people come and say, you know, this is really useful to everybody. It's not just a class, it's really useful. And so around that time, I decided maybe I could use my lectures as a jumping off point for writing a book about issues in personality and psychology generally, but mainly in the field of personality, that would translate into something relevant to the ex-boyfriends of this world and the fathers and mums who are about to separate of the students I adored. And that's what the book, that was the genesis of the book. And so it follows my lecture course, although, you know, my publishers were assiduous in making sure that I didn't write as if I were lecturing. Mm. But because I lecture with some degree of humor, apparently, I was able to insert something that lifted it up from sort of the dry exegesis of a psychological scholar, which I like to think I am. So it's written for... I like to say it's written for the person who's waiting in Starbucks for the friend who's late again. Mm-hmm. You know, that's who it's for. Mm. And you'll learn about different dimensions of personality, the Big Five expanded, about how the environment has a shape on a personality, how cities have personalities, about free traits, how we act out of character, about perceived control and cardiac risk, and dozens of topics that most people are not aware of because they're very seldom discussed in the pop psych literature. They're more in the personality textbooks, but I've tried to put a somewhat light touch while still being technically correct on these. That's my aspiration.
And I guess for those who have seen your TED Talk, for example, that's a very sort of gentle introduction to that.
It is. It's a very brief and surreal introduction to it. TED Talks are quite an experience. You open your mouth and you hope for the best.
Well, luckily it's 18 minutes and it's over, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So in the science of personality...
Yep.
What's new and upcoming? What are things that you're actually looking at now?
Yeah, my students are particularly interested in looking at how the personal projects that people engage in can be shaped and helped by other individuals, including counselors and therapists, so that you can shape a life that is happier and healthier and. Even more important than that is meaningful in some important way. So we have a lot of work going on in that area, and I find that very exciting. There's also a lot of work that I find fascinating on the neuroscience of personality traits. Some of the dimensions of personality, the Big Five, adhere together, being open and extroverted, adhere together and they form something that and open to experience form something that seems to be mediated by the dopaminergic system of the brain, whereas others that are more constraining and self-controlling, like conscientiousness, agreeableness, because it stops dissent, and so on.
I agree with you entirely.
Yeah. they seem to be mediated by the serotonergic system. And so tracing the biochemistry through and looking at the actual mechanism of how these relatively stable traits of personality are fed and change over time, because they do change over time. We're not set in stone. Even after 30, there are changes in personality. In fact, right up into people nearly as old as I am. So we have the capacity to change. And among those studies, the one that's most excited me, and it was written up recently, an article that juxtaposed some research out of UCLA on the human genome with our own research at Cambridge, which showed that the genome itself can be changed by social factors. This is like epigenetics. This is pretty stunning, that just having a factor like loneliness, growing up lonely, can actually exert changes upon the human genome, which of course then can be transmitted further. And these are things that even a decade ago would be sort of inconceivable. Mm. And so it looks as if there's a wonderful convergence occurring between neuroscience and biochemistry and personality trait psychology and personality neuroscience and social psychology and social science, and all of them converge for me in the personal projects that people pursue, driven by traits, reinforced or abnegated by social structures. To me, that's where all the action is. What are the projects we're allowed to pursue? What are the ones that give meaning in our lives? And what are the ones that bring us to our knees?
Excellent. Yeah. So much more we could talk about, but we're going to save your voice because you've still got a keynote to...
I do. You're right.
But if people want to know more about you, Dr. Little, where can they find out more about you and your research?
Yes, I have a website, brianrlittle.com, and my TED Talk also has a reference to the book. The book is called Me, Myself, and Us, The Science of Personality and the Art of Well-Being. It's available in paperback, hardback, and also there's an audio version, which I was advised not to read. And I sort of regret it now because it's sort of weird having somebody else read. Yeah. He's an actor, a wonderful, wonderful voice. But those are my words. Mm. And so the next book, I'll do it myself, but apparently it's very well done. And the Me, Myself, and Us book is a Facebook page that has a lot of my interviews, and so I'll put this one up there, I guess, if I'm allowed to do
it. Absolutely.
So that's where people can find out a little bit more, or go to my webpage at the University of Cambridge.
Excellent. We like to end the podcast off with a little saying. We're the Agile Revolution. We like to say Viva la Revolution, which I'm going to ask you to join me in just a moment. But I'm just wondering, what does that say about the personality of us?
Viva la Revolution.
What does that say about
us? Oh, it says you're passionate.
I think that's something.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Viva la Gira Revolution.
There you go. Yeah. So I think you said it.
May we?
Viva la Revolution. Thank you very much, Dr. Little.
Thank you.